Hare Krishna. Jai Shri Gurudev. Hare Krishna. Some question?
Yes, there are some questions.
Oh, okay.
The first one is, if the body is the outcome of the soul's delusion, a so-called straitjacket for the soul, then what new opportunities for service does Swarup give?
Well, I think they're referring, I said the body is the biological expression of the soul's delusion. So, in Subjective Evolution of Consciousness, Srila Guru Maharaj speaks about the chit jagat and the achit jagat, and the conscious world, the unconscious world, or what sometimes referred to as the material world, you know, spiritual world, material world, world of spirit, world of matter, consciousness, unconsciousness. So, Srila Guru Maharaj, he says that, well, there's a Vedic saying also, asanga, asango hayam purusha, that although we talk about being contaminated, contaminated consciousness, jiva, soul, etc., we're reminded in this Vedic aphorism that the soul's never actually touched by it. Okay. It's a peculiar situation. So, how does all of this transpire or take place? As the soul that's in the chit jagat, the spiritual conscious plane, it needs to have a shadow representation of itself to navigate the mundane. So he introduces the concept of chit abhas. There's that word again. Chit abhas means a semblance of consciousness. Because remember, we're not talking about the way, you know, doctors are, he's conscious. No, that's not what we mean. When it says a semblance of consciousness, really means Krishna consciousness. Because that's what consciousness is meant for. Bhagavan. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabyate. It's not some generic, abstract concept of consciousness. It means awareness of Krishna and one's relationship with Krishna. Bhayam dhatiya binibeshi tatshat. In forgetfulness of that, we're dealing with a world that fills us with anxiety, and particularly in relation to mortality. But to get to that point, Guru Maharaj said, there must be chitabhas, or what he calls chayabhas, a shadow representation of the original. Right? Like you can see, you know, and I mentioned recently this quote from Shakespeare for the literary minded. Out, out, brief candle, life's but a walking shadow. A poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard from no more. A tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury signifying nothing. On a happier note, is the Swarup and its possibility, as opposed to shadow world. So, chitabhas means the shadow representation of the soul. So there's the mind is a shadow representation of the spiritual mind, the intellect, etc. And in the absence of serving function, and deluded by the satanic mania of reigning in hell. By the way, rain doesn't mean like it's raining out. It's R-E-I-G-N, like to be king or queen. Because I don't know what's happening. Reigning in hell, how does that work? You know? I guess you hear many new things when you come to Krishna. It'll be raining in hell. When, you know, no, to means to be king or queen, that type of reign, R-E-G-R-E-I-G-N, right? Yeah. So he calls it satanic mania. Right? And just like a person who's under the influence of some maniacal thoughts, they're not themselves. Right? They're envisioning themselves as a king, a queen, or what, or of many things, but it has nothing to do with their actual identity. Right? So in the classic stereotype, you have the doctors and nurses sort of humoring them. Napoleon, can we speak to you? You know, yes. But, you know, he's not Napoleon. They're trying to, it's some sort of therapy. They want to, everything else is okay. They want to remove the mania. Then the original identity comes. But anyway, back to this, life's but a walking shadow, chitabhas, chayabhas. So the soul cannot touch matter on account of its nature. It cannot. That's asango hyayam purusha. It cannot deal with any of these things. So there has to be a shadow representation. And upon that shadows, the ego, they are the shadows in varying degrees. Ego, intelligence, mind. Bhumir apo analo vayu kamano buddhir eva cha. Ahankara iti yame bina prakritir astadha. Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter. These are all material energy, not spiritual. They're material. In the next verse, he says, Aparayam itastvanyam pakritim, there's that word again, vidhi me param. There's a superior type of prakriti. What is that? Jiva bhuta mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. That are infusing life into the universe and animating it. But Guru Maharaj has given this original concept, but it's just not the soul then in illusions just manipulating matter. No, there's some gradual, we have evolution, devolution, from that the soul's actual position to be the ahankar, a false ego, intelligence, mind, the subtle body upon which a gross body is developed. Again, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita has that. Where he says, Mam evangsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manakshastrani indriyani prakriti stani karshati. Anyway, it's around there. He says, the way Prabhupada rendered this is very nice. He said they're seated on a machine made out of material energy. Like that. So, and how is it decided? What type of ego, what type of intellect, mind, body, etc.? They said, biological expression of the soul's delusion. Jalaja navalakani stavaro lakavingshati. So many types of aquatics, plants, insects, trees, birds, beasts, animals, human beings. Right? In terms of the expressed exploiting tendency, a particular body gives that. So it says a particular type of mind and senses. Isn't it? Yeah, that's yantram mudjani mayaya. That's the one I'm looking for. Just forget the first line. Yantram means here, machine. That's what it's compared to. So the soul enveloped in this shadow representation of itself and the forms of ego, intellect, mind, etc., is now, then you can, you know, drink a glass of water. Or, you know, tap the table. The soul, otherwise it cannot interact with the mundane. Then Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev. Or Tasmat, or no, what is that? Nunam, no. Tasyeva hetu prayate to kovido, na labyate Brahma upariyada. In both of these, wandering in the universe. What is the universe? It's the world of misconception. You know, we're riveted to these things and thinking in terms of, you know, elements and planets and spatial relationships. But at the heart of the matter, it's the world of misconception. That's what's generated all of this. Why Guru Maharaj quotes Berkeley saying, the world is in the mind. Which is easily parodied, because the typical misunderstanding of that is people say, oh, this is all in our mind. This isn't really here. I see. Or I mentioned Woody Allen in one of his, right? He says, if, you know, nothing exists, it's all in our mind, he said, then I definitely overpaid for the refrigerator I bought last week. Taking it to the natural conclusion. But that's not what Berkeley is saying when he says the world is in the mind. He's saying this, all these things, they're the outcome of consciousness. And we can say polluted consciousness or contaminated consciousness. Thinking in the wrong way. And in the Bhagavatam and elsewhere, there are, you know, intricate descriptions of how it is that spirit can be apparently for some time converted into matter. Beginning with the description of so they're called energies, right? Of which there's what, Chit Shakti, Jiva Shakti, and Maya Shakti. And I'm not now, nor am I qualified to give an elaborate description of that. Sometimes Guru Maharaj has. But how, and he was, and that's his advice to us, saying the world, we're preoccupied with thinking like how these elements that we observe and the biology we observe, how does this all get to the point of generating consciousness? We're fascinated by that idea. And we think we have, you know, we don't really know, we have a pretty good idea, you know, slowly, gradually, through the process of evolution, this happens. Till one day you have, you know, something becoming conscious of itself. Right? That's the ticket, right? Being conscious of yourself. Right? Guru Maharaj said, rather, we should try and understand how it is that consciousness can generate all of this. That should be researched. Right? We're told, this is hard. It has weight. It's soft, hard, has length, width, breadth, dimensions. Right? It has a color. And Guru Maharaj is saying, and what are those? Those are all subjective concepts. So what is this? It's a cluster of subjective concepts. When you get many of them together, they make a table or a world. So navigating the world of misconception that's designed for that, actually, from gross misconception to very subtle misconception. That's why there's all these planetary systems, according to Veda, 14 planetary systems. Means levels of going from gross misrepresentation to subtle misrepresentation, but all misrepresentation. dvaita, dvaita bhadra, sab manodharm, a bal, a manda, a sub brahm. That this everything here is illusion, or like a dream world. So saying this is good or that is bad, it's all a mistake. The old saw, you can say, wet stool, dry stool. It's all stool. And interestingly, the Sanskrit word for, one of the Sanskrit words for matter is stool. S-T-H-U-L-A, stool. And it's the grossest type of mundane representation. So, navigating how? On the basis of exploitation, accepting oneself as the center, an egocentric world, and then from that position, trying to expand the circumference of one's exploiting capacity. That's generally what's going on, whether in animal society or in human society. Those sort of things. Taking oneself as the center, and the extension of that, extended selfishness, is everything that I deem important or significant or of value. That'll be the standard by which everything is judged. That's humanism in a nutshell. Taking yourself as the center. And in the more gross representations of materialism, Ayn Rand, who, interestingly, although she's from Petersburg and she's Russian, no Russian people know about her. But she was very popular in America with certain people. But no one in Russia knows who she is. She's just another woman from Petersburg. But she would say, the only basis for doing anything is self-interest. That should be your only motive under all circumstances, is whether it's in your perceived self-interest to do so. So that, and she calls her, interestingly, or ironically, or not, she calls her philosophy, or her philosophy is referred to as materialism. That should be the only motive for action, is it in my self-interest? And to be fair, she's saying, you can do something nice for somebody else if you perceive that's in your self-interest. So indirectly, inadvertently, she's actually telling the truth about what's going on here. So Guru Maharaj, one of his original expressions, referencing altruism and humanitarian work, he said, it's extended selfishness. The outcome of selfishness. It's just extended selfishness. So what is mine, my family, and with children, what I like about them, observing them, is the naked truth. Well, I mean, in more ways than one, but you know, they haven't learned how to hide yet, or lie, or different. So sometimes they're just very blunt. You know, it takes them, they go, mine! You know, they don't go, excuse me, but I was playing. That happens to, you know, it's in my care. They just go, mine! You know, like, oh, okay. Later they learn to, you know, soften it. I was playing with that and it's, you know, residing with me for some time. Not like that. Right? And I saw this one YouTube video where this child has cookies all over his mouth, and his mother, she can tell, she's turned on the phone to get this. She goes, say that again, what you just said? And he goes, I only like you when you give me cookies. And she said, that's the only time? And he says, yes. And then she says, but I love you. And he says, I love you too, but I don't like you all the time. So he's just telling the truth, right? So why did I say that? Oh, about self-extended selfishness, taking yourself as the center and assessing the relative value of something on the basis, does it perceive, fulfill what I perceive to be my self-interest? And the reason I'm saying this is ironic, as perhaps most things are, and with the mundane and its spectral opposite to what the spiritual is, the perverted reflection, is that really, like, tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shreya uttamam shabde pare chanishnaktam brahmanupasamashrayam jigyasu shreyam uttamam. It said, you should inquire, what is spiritual life about? What's the basis, and where does the shift take place? When you inquire about what's ultimately beneficial for you, you're misconceiving, Shreyas and Prayas, you're misconceiving, you're thinking this short-term program for self-fulfillment is addressing your actual inner needs, when it's not. It's not in your long-term interest. This, look, even Stephen Hawking had the sense of humor to call his book A Brief History of Time. When you realize that's actually humorous, right? A Brief History of Time. But actually, we can say, yeah, because it has, in one sense, this world of time and space has, an incept date and an expiration date. Budva, budva, praliyate, in Gita, Krishna said, and it'll happen again and again and again. But this is the realm, we're living in the realm of time and space. The spiritual world is not constrained by time and space. So we see when Krishna descends into this world with these eternal associates, and for the benefit of everyone, manifest his divine pastimes, sometimes they contradict the laws of physics and time and space. Right? He's lifting the Govardhan or the Rasa Lila, we're told Brahma Ratri, a night of Brahma. And we should say, how long is that? Check the Bhagavad Gita, Sahasra Yuga Parjantam, Ahor Yad Brahmanovidu. 1,000 yuga cycles, 4,300,000,000 years, 1,000 of those, that's a day of Brahma. What is it? 4,300,000,000. Brahmaratri means the same amount for the evening. So this Rasa Lila, the ultimate romantic dance, fulfills the aspiration of all romantics and lovers who want to, dance the night away forever, the never-ending embrace, all of these things that in their, we can say, their finer moments, human beings express, until they get a little older and more cynical and go, I should have listened to the cookie thing the kid was saying. Damn, that's true. It's true throughout beginning, middle, and end. I should have known. Right? Until they become cynical about mundane prospects and possibility and relationship. Right. Why Romeo and Juliet? Why does it work? Because they're 14. That's why it works. See, they're not old. They're 14 years old, Romeo and Juliet, as far as I remember. Right. So it shows, in other words, they're not tainted yet by the world of experience. And even that, it's a tragedy, right? The way it ends. It shows, we could say, Krishna Prem is not a thing of this world. Look, even Romeo and Juliet, they don't get to have that here, what to speak of Krishna Prem. Right? But that said, why do we all want that? We're hardwired for Romeo and Juliet. That's why that story is so powerful. To this, it was written hundreds of years ago. But that story and similar stories the magnetic pull of that really is Krishna conception. If we could come to our senses and properly conceive things under the direction of Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, Vaishnav. But that's what the pull is, that's what we want. Later, we're supposed to... There was a cartoon in the magazine, New Yorker. It's a literary magazine that's famous for literary-type cartoons. And there's, like, the husband and wife who've been married for, like, forever, you know, 40, 50 years. And he's, like, reading the paper, and his wife's on the side. And he's responding to a question that she's asked him, which we can understand what that question is by his answer, because his answer is, "What do you mean by love?" So we understand her question is, you know, "Do you still love me?" And he's like, without putting the paper down, he's going, "What do you mean by love?" So now it's come to the point, like, we're going to have to, what was very clear in the meaning, now we have to define and think and look at definition number 5, subsection C, you know. Then we understand that other type of love that we hankered for from the beginning, the Romeo and Juliet, the pristine love that's unaffected by any mundane experience, that transcends everything and all the good things that we think that goes with it. We think, oh, yes, it's not a thing of this world. And then we hear about Krishna Prema, and Mahaprabhu saying, and that's not a thing of this world. Krishna Prema, Hema, Jambu Nada. It's like the gold, the legendary rivers of gold in heaven. Nothing within your experience. But does that mean that it doesn't exist? No. Saying, but not in this plane. Then what is this plane? It's the world of illusion, what, based on exploitation. So another way to reframe this is say, it doesn't exist within the world of exploitation. Whatever you see that resembles that is extended selfishness, right? Which is based on a misperception of what is actually in your self-interest. So in answer to this question, the Bhagavatam says, Muktir hitvanyata rupam swaropena vibhastiti. When you get liberated from the world of exploitation, then the possibility of the swarup, your actual identity, and loving relationship, that becomes a reality. And everything that you were hankering for and dreamed of beyond your dreams, right? What do they say? The truth is stranger than fiction. Beyond your wildest dreams, that possibility is there in the upper world. And this we can say, just for the sake of analysis, is what... One of the reasons Devarshi Narada, he's chastising Vedavyas, saying, you haven't clearly indicated to the people that what their prospect is in the swarup world. You're telling them about in this diseased condition, this world, what we just said, it's an illusion, it's a dream, you know, it's a colossal hoax, it's all these things and more. You're saying, you know, and we're in a disease condition, and here's the way to get out of your disease condition. And when you're cured of the disease, ridrogam, consumerism, which is, you know, one of humanism's more outstanding products, consumerism, back to, you know, I want to consume. I want to acquire, control, and consume things that are lower than me to achieve happiness. One of the flaws of that type of thinking is that consciousness is superior to dull matter. So no amount or arrangement of dull matter will satisfy consciousness. Which for some reason reminds me of the fish play. The old ISKCON play about a fish out of water. They're trying to satisfy him. He will only be satisfied when he goes back into the water environment. Srinvantu Rishe Amritasya Putra the nectar world, can't live in the non-amrita, the mrityu. One of our Gurudev's beloved friends, he's in Calcutta. His original name is Mrityunjay, but he has another name. You know who he is.
Mira's husband? No,
this is in Calcutta near Koikali. There's Amalendu. This is another man. Anyway, I forget. And he has a son who's like a... Anyway. His original name is Mrityunjay. That means who is victorious over death. That's the point. Amrita is that which, in the generic sense, makes one deathless. But as Guru Maharaj pointed out, and he was speaking to me about the conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because I had just read the 12th canto, right? Prabhupada translated up to 10, 14, 13, 14, around there, and the rest was done by his disciples. Anyway, it took some time to get to the 12th canto, so I just read the 12th canto and the last chapter, and I asked Guru Maharaj one afternoon something I saw that was puzzling, because it's a very short chapter. Remember, the last sloka of the Bhagavatam, very favorite to Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, is Nama Sankirtanam Yasya Sarva Papa Pranashan. I mean, you can Nama Sankirtanam, you know. It's praising the holy name of Krishna. After the whole book is done, the very last sloka, Nama Sankirtanam Yasya Sarva Papa Pranashanam Pranamo Dukasamanas Tan Namami Harim Param. It's a very beautiful ending. But this chapter is very small. Even the 12th canto as a canto is very small. So I thought, these slokas, they must have some special significance. So one of them that begins by saying, Prishte Brahmyadamanda Mandarigiri Gravagya Kranduyana Nidralo Kamatarkrite Shashapantuva something. Very beautiful. It's about Kurma, the Kurma avatar. And it's encapsulating that pastime. Right? The Kurma avatar and the Mandara Hill and the churning. And I thought, this is peculiar. Why is this? The Bhagavatam's reaching like this crescendo conclusion. And I mean, that's a wonderful pastime. Appears in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam. Is it the 8th? Yeah. But I'm saying, why mention that again? Yeah. But it's the conclusion of the Bhagavatam, so it must be important. So at the time, when I asked Guru Maharaj, you know, he started to think. And I thought, oh, Lord, you know, I'm troubling. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm asking him some, like, one of those questions, you know. Yeah, and so I was going to start to say, Maharaj, you don't have to answer this now, because I thought I was troubling him, but actually he was doing what he says he does, scanning all the scriptures, the statements of Saraswati Thakur and Bhaktivinoda and all the predecessor charges, their commentaries, the senior vice. He's like looking all over this. And as I started to say, was going to say, you don't have to, you know, Guru Maharaj said, what was the object of their churning? And it shows just the way he minds things ontologically. What you said is the basis is Ramananda Sambhad. Remember, Ramananda and Mahaprabhu, they're mining. It's compared to one in one place to mining. Like you get some like iron ore or some copper, and then, you know, some silver, then you mine more and you're getting gold. That's what it's saying they're doing. They keep mining, extracting one superior substance after another one, not the same substance. By going deeper, there's one substance, and then a more valuable substance. When you go deeper, a more valuable substance, and such. And at the very beginning, that, what does it say? How he empowered Ramananda, Sancharja, Rama Bida, Bhakta Meghe, Swa Bhakti Siddhanta, Chayamritani, Gorabdir, Etair, Amuna, Vitirnaish, something, Prayati. Saying that Bhakta Meghe, he's like a devotional cloud. Bhakti Siddhanta, Chayamritani. The Bhakti Siddhanta, there's an ocean of Bhakti Siddhanta that's full of so many valuable gems. And this Bhakta Meghe, Ramananda, he is like this cloud who's risen from that ocean, and he's full of these gems, and he's raining Siddhantic gems back on the ocean again, who is Mahaprabhu. That's like the opening sloka to that chapter, which is Guru Maharaj's favorite. So Guru Maharaj is in that same, he's mining the substance. He said, what was the object of their churning? Right? He said, oh, the devas and the asuras. There's the milk ocean and the Mandara hill. And they wrap the celestial serpent Vasuki and like a churning rod. The devas on one side, the asuras on the other side, they're... And the Mandara hill is churning. And, oh, but it, what is it? It's on the back of Kurma, the Kurma avatar, which is very aprakrita and beautiful because how Krishna plays and the how the pastimes unfold inconceivably. He's supposed to be omnipotent. Right, like in Govardhan, when his thousands of hands are coming out to accept all the offerings from everyone. And you know. But here, we know like a turtle cannot scratch his own back. Right? Everybody knows that. That would be unusual. So then you think like, well, certainly he's omnipotent. His hand can extend, you know, if he has an itch. Which is something to begin with is interesting. But he should be able to, you know, reach that, right? A little further. But he can't because he's a turtle. He appears as a turtle. So what does that mean? He needs someone else to scratch his back. That's Krishna's mercy. That's how Krishna allows us to participate. You say, what prospect is there? Well, here's an example. So, and then, but this is not ordinary. How are they going to, he's a rather large size turtle on top of it all. So, what? He's in the ocean of milk. They put the Mandara mountain on his back, wrap Vasuki, celestial serpent. They're churning like this. So, it's relieving the itch on his back as they churn. And simultaneously, you know, like Lakshmi Devi is generated from the ocean, the moon, Krishna appears in the Chandrabhangsha. And what else? Indra's elephant, I think, yeah. Airavata, Uchayas, many divine things are being generated from this nectar. And he said, what is the purpose? Just like when you turn milk, to get the cream. So they want to get Amrita. So if you read in an encyclopedia or somewhere, you know, they will say, Amrita, that is the Sanskrit word for immortality. Right? And so that fits nicely in the Western, the stereotype of Western imagination. The gods, they want to achieve immortality. They want to live for... That's boring. The Bhagavatam is not boring. The Bhagavatam is not arranged to tell you stereotypical things, right? Starts with Narada chastising Vyas for saying, it wasn't your idea, but inadvertently, what people got from you is religion. And they're thinking, I will be religious so that I can live in the world worry-free and successfully. So I can have a happy life in the mortal existence, basically. If you're religious, you can be happy in the world of suffering. He's saying, that's why, and they're going to quote you, Veda Vyas. He said, that's why, from no less than you, Veda Vyas, you have to tell them, no, there's another world beyond this one where they have possibility of life and all of its complexity and possibility. Parinirsthitopi naragunye uttama sloka lilaya grihita cheta rajar se akyanam yadaditavan. Sukadev, the loudspeaker for that saint, you all know, I am a legend in my own time. Right? Never, not even a trace amount of mundane tinge. That's why he's uniquely qualified. And he passed the male-female Eros test, walking by the bathing Dibya Devis. So I understand, Sukadev has no interest in mundane sensuality. But the sensuality of the pastimes of Radha, Krishna, and Braja Gopis, says, captured him and carried his consciousness to a world he didn't know existed previously. Right? That's consistent with Narada telling Vyas, now, this is what you have to do in the Bhagavatam. Is the whole book really is about that, the prospect, that possibility, right, of that life in the upper world. And not in some generic sense about immortality. This is Guru Maharaj's point. He said, so what are they trying to achieve? Amrita. He said, but what is it really? It's not immortality. He's saying what it is it means nectarine substance. And its most superficial aspect of representation means immortality. Right? Like sat. Right. We have sat chit anandam. Right? So he's saying, really, what is nectar? He says, what they're trying to get at and why this is being mentioned in the 12th canto and the final chapter is to say that the ultimate, what the Bhagavatam is presenting is the ultimate nectarine substance that everyone should be seeking. Like search for Sri Krishna reality, the beautiful. Akila Rasamrita Murti, Rasa Raj, Krishna. So he's saying, Madhura Rasa is the Amritam. It's the creme de la creme of nectarine substances. And the Bhagavatam is telling you the pivotal point of material existence is erotic tendencies, and it's saying that has a place in the spiritual world. And that's why he told, and Vyas, you didn't make that clear. So people will think the only possibility for expressing, we'll use Sanyal and Saraswati Thakur's name, the erotic principle is in this world. You must make it clear that that and infinitely multiplied, magnified more is possible in that world. Machchita madgata prana bodayantas parasparam katayantas tamam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. So Guru Maharaj is saying in that nutshell sloka from the Gita, we're saying the devotees, when they're engaged in Krishna katha, Hari katha, in a substantial way, tushyanti, they're relishing nectarine substance. And to what degree? Tushyanti cha ramanti. Ramanti is a reference to the erotic principle. This type of pleasure is coming to them from this sort of activity. Madan Mohan, Govinda, Gopinath. Guru Maharaj said, why Madan Mohan is the Sambandhagyan deity, deity of Sanatana Goswami, because the whole world is pivoting on the erotic principle, Cupid. Right? What do we say today early? Oh, Anangotsavam. And one of the few slokas from the Gita Govinda, then the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Vishvesham anuranjanena janayan ananda mindivara sreni shamalakamala. Anangotsavam. Ananga means is the name of Cupid. Utsav means festival. Saying the Krishna is like Anangotsava, a festival for Cupid, the divine form of Krishna. So from Freud, and the erotic principle is the driving force behind all of existence. It's not just an aspect, it's the driving principle. We'll say that much he got right before someone goes, well, there are many, forget it. Just making a reference. It's just a reference. The driving principle of material existence. That's what all of this is about. Every species, human beings included, this is the driving principle. This is why the world exists. Love makes the world go round, to put it in another way. Right? And he's saying, so that principle, Madan in Sanskrit, Cupid, the erotic principle, Madan Mohan. Krishna is so beautiful that only the beauty of Krishna is capable of breaking the stranglehold that Madan, the erotic, mundane erotic principle, has on Jiva. That's why it's not just some intellectual, philosophical, like, we'll sit around, that's very interesting. It's like life and death, make it or break it, type interesting. That's what, it's not something like, it's esoteric. The difficulty is, you cannot express it any more explicitly for risk of committing offense. But if you can do the math on what has been expressed thus far, then you're saying, what is your prospect? Whatever, just say in summary, whatever you perceive of here as a source of happiness to the extreme or never-ending happiness, love, that can be realized there infinitely beyond what you've conceived thus far. That's why Rupa Goswami gives that sloka in the beginning, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Brahmananda Bhavedesha Chetparadha Gunikrita Naiti Bhakti Sukham Bodhe Paramanu Tulamapi. And remember, this is coming from Rupa Goswami. So you have to take it seriously. He says, Brahmananda Ramante Yogino Anante Sachirananda Chirame. The yogis are repulsed by mundane eroticism. Those who are experiencing Brahmananda is distasteful compared to what they're experiencing. Right? Repulsive. He's saying, so that Brahmananda, that spiritual happiness, multiply it a trillionfold, and it's not equivalent to an atomic fraction of the pleasure of Krishna Bhakti Rasa. That is expressed by Rupa Goswami. So, as I mentioned, that's like an advertisement, right? From the most qualified person. And this is the comparison being given. That should pick the imagination, that sort of prospect and possibility. And not to then foolishly try and prematurely, you know, pluck the unripened fruit. Not that kind of thing. Gurmer said, hearing something like that, what Rupa Goswami expresses, that should keep you calm in your present situation. Like, all right, let's just keep going in this direction. It's good. That's the ultimate. All right, okay, that's enough for me to know. to take another step, to walk further in this direction, to continue, to proceed. Remember, we said, well, why all the gradual and the, you know, the Vedas are only indicating? Well, now you can understand. If it's a trillionfold greater than that pleasure, is not, you know, an atomic fraction of it, then we can understand why there has to be some direction indication, gradual, incremental progress in that direction. But that's where it leads. And Guru Maharaj's sloka, Yadamiva Mahima Sri Bhagavatam Katayam Prati Padam Anubhutam Vapya Labdhavideya Tadakila Rasa Murti Shyama Lila Avalamba Madhura Rasa Di Sri Radha Parapadmam Prabhadeya. That although ostensibly her name is not mentioned, at every step of the way, it's all of this. And you have to remember this for interpreting or assessing the value of anything. He's saying it's all meant to take us in the direction of the service of her holy lotus feet. And who is she? That person, Shyamalila Avalambam. The Shyamalila, means Madhura Rasa, is all dependent upon her. And this whole book, which is about Krishna, right? So much so the Prabhupada called the 10th Canto the Krishna book. It's all about Krishna. If you want to understand Krishna properly, it's this way. And who is she in that Ramananda Sambad? And he's saying, Mahabhav Chintamani. She's, you know, a jewel mine of Mahabhav. She's, what you want to understand anything about Krishna? Krishna Prema, love of Krishna, she is that to its infinite degree and can share that, nourish her servitors with that divine substance. But why the devotee, like the mantra, it's interesting. There's so many mantras, right? What could possibly be better than Hare Krishna mantra? You have, like sometimes, Babaji, I'm not saying we should do this, but he would chant, Radhe Krishna, Radhe Krishna, Krishna Krishna, you know. Mean, Hare mean, Radha, this mantra that's Radha and Krishna. It's impossible for anything to be better than that. So we're very fortunate. And when Guru Maharaj got the Harinam from Saraswati Thakur, and asked, what does it mean? Rama. It's Hare Rama. We say, oh, Hare Krishna. But what about Hare Rama? He said, you know, Raman Radha. Radha Raman. Rama also means Krishna. But this type of Krishna. Truth must dazzle gradually, or all men will go blind. So little by little, incrementally. But as Guru Maharaj said, a drop of the infinite is infinite. Yes.
Actually, may I ask something?
Sure.
Something came to my mind while you were talking and you were mentioning, Gurudev, the Kurma Leela.
Yes.
How Krishna is allowing us to take part in one of the books, I think it was Revealed Truth, Govinda Maharaj is talking about the transcendental family, how to look at our family or at anything that is in front of us or around us, and how to transcend it. Could I hear a bit about this?
What family are you referring to?
Like he was referring to our...
Or was he referring to?
Or he was referring to, according to...
You mean like your mother and father, brother and sister type family? Or God sister and God brother?
Actually, he was referring to like wife, children, mother, father, but yeah. to look at them or to deal with them as service to Krishna. Or my understanding was kind of like that.
It can be. Remember, Gurudev is very generous when he discusses these things. I cannot imitate his generosity. But I can refer to it. Because, I mean, I say that because for him, it's really from the heart. So, I mean, Sudarshan, he grew up in a devotee family, but you may recall, like, there were children in L.A., these little boys. You know, you see these little kids running around the street. What are you doing? And they're like, we're playing sannyasis. And they'd have on dhotis and little dandas. These kids who were this big, they're like, we're playing sannyasi. I'm like, oh, okay, you know. And it's like, but there's a little bit of one-upsmanship. You know, like there's always some devotee mother with a child and their child slobbering over like, a picture book with, you know, he loves to look at the pictures of Krishna, you know. We're like, okay. And, so, not that that's not true, but there's serving your family, like, how shall we say, using it as an excuse for mundane life, that is not advisable. But if one can recognize husband sees wife as servitor, wife sees husband as servitor, servant of guru, see the children as servants of guru, that's another thing. So he's talking about like, in Bhaktivinoda, manasa deho geho yo kichumor arpilu tua padate nanda kishore. What Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, and even then, I mean, I'm just saying this, the bowed head and folded palms. That's in the song, and that he's showing how it can be like that. What is it? Shuddha bhajana, grihe bhajana deki, goloka. Yeah. I saw my home turned into goloka vrindavan. This is the vision of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That said, Guru Maharaj will say of his, 14 children or so, Guru Maharaj will say, two of them are seriously interested in Krishna consciousness. And of the two, we consider one a sahajiya. So there's that side to the equation also. Right? So, Guru Maharaj says, when the husband and wife come before the deity, they're both servitors. The husband and wife relationship is not active there. So we know in, you know, human interaction, it doesn't mean that every moment someone's going to be thinking like that. But what we would say, if there can be moments where you're not thinking about the mundane relationship and thinking servitor, then that's a wonderful thing. Remember when Gaur Kishordas Babaji only had one disciple, but some were, we could call, followers or people who came around for his darshan. And when it was relayed to him that one of them was going to become, get married, and they were wondering how Babaji Maharaj would respond to this, and he said, oh, tell him to dress and decorate his wife as a gopi so that he will always remember that the gopis are for Krishna's enjoyment. So, you know, as Prabhupada once said, Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj was a very humorous fellow. You say some different things like that. So, it means that we have to be contemplative in a real sense. Think like that about what is there We're talking about actual identity. Sometimes we have to look to the swarup to think of something, to ignore or suppress the familiarity of human interaction. Familiarity breeds contempt. To go in the other direction and think, oh, this is a servitor. It will be good for me, helpful for me, to assist them. As Guru Maharaj gave advice to managers, one idea to think, you have so many things you need to be done, who can do that? Right? Some person is put in your camera saying, oh, all right, I'll have them do this. Right? That's easy to understand. But Guru Maharaj gave some other insight, saying, when someone comes to you, think, this is a servant of Guru and Krishna. How can I assist them in realizing their service potential, what they're supposed to be doing? That's another way to look at it. But how that will play out practically, as I say, if we can have moments of remembrance like that, that'll be a good thing. But Gurudev did not like that, and generation of family members, if the, there's a village in Bengal called Kutumba. I couldn't believe it when someone, because I remember hearing this old sloka, Kutumba Baranenava. And it's like the burden of family life. So there's a village in West Bengal called Kutumba. I'm not advising that anyone go there like on pilgrimage or anything. But Gurudev didn't like if and recognition of that burden, responsibility, if it took one away from seva, that displeased him at the same time. So where, how to find that balance? So, but we want, again, we want, something real. Like Guru Maharaj would say at times, I suppose you want to know whether or not that's real or what is being expressed is real. So it means it's not just a blanket statement that in every instance or every situation it will be that service to the family is service to Krishna, but there may be instances where it is and one would be remiss to not recognize them when that is before them. So, and the inverse of that, just for those who might wonder, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he also fulfilled his obligations as the head of a household, a father, and particularly in India, you have to get your daughters married, and he did these things. But that said, I remember being on the roof with Prabhupada in Bombay, and he was talking. It was interesting. He said to Giriraj Maharaj, who was the leader in charge of everything there, he said, are you keeping that one room ready? And he said, yes, Prabhupada. And we're all like, wow, it's like a mystery. What's the room? Who's the room for? And Prabhupada, it is for one special guest. And Prabhupada knows we're all dying. Now we're all dying to hear who it is. And he goes, how he is special, I shall explain. Then he leaned forward. And then I was surprised. He said, it is for my son. He had more than one. He said, he's thinking of doing bhajan. And he wants to go to Sridhar Maharaj's ashram. That's also interesting. Prabhupada's son thinking of doing bhajan, he wants to go to Guru Maharaj's ashram. And Prabhupada said, but I told him, I have so many. You can come here, I'll keep one room for you. And then he was reflecting, he said, he was so serious when he was younger. He said, one Janmashtami came, and the boy was, he was 10 or something. He was fasting, and throughout the afternoon and toward the early evening, he became weak. And Prabhupada, I told him, eat something. said, but he would not. He wanted to wait, you know. He said, I had so much hope for him. Then he said, but he became spoiled by the communists. And that he means the Bengali communists, not the ones from, you know. As we know from Amiya, he saw in the communist office in Calcutta, they have like Lenin with Tilak and Gopi Chandan, they put on a garland every day. But he means by that political party there in West Bengal. We were seeing, he was temporarily a Tathasta Vichar type situation where he was reflecting upon a child of his as a father. And what he had hoped for his child in terms of his spiritual evolution and development. And he also expressed some disappointment. That's why it's not an exaggeration to say that in Srila Govinda Maharaj, Srila Gurudev, what he wanted for his sons, he got. So he thought, like this, what studying Bhagavad Gita, I mean, he found a partner. Like what he envisioned his son being, Srila Gurudev gave him that. It's not just something we say or wishful thing. It's true. And at that inauguration of Mayapur, Prabhupada said, what Govinda Maharaj says is true. He's like my affectionate son and the one he wants to like share all Krishna consciousness with. But then Prabhupada said something on this same subject, interesting as well. He had these two daughters, and he said, I made arrangements for their marriage. And then he said, but my wife, she did not approve. He said, there, and he has his hand like in his own, and he said, therefore I said, let them all go to hell. That was a sweeping gesture. Let them all go to hell. So then we understood in that moment that he was saying, these sort of obligations, they only go so far. And that's when his sister came, who is also a devotee, Bhava Tarini Didi, everyone called affectionately Pishima. She said, Prabhu, you're just meant to preach Krishna consciousness. We'll take care of this. She was encouraging him to leave family life, take sannyas, and just be a full-time preacher, and saying, whatever family obligation, we'll make these arrangements. So all of this stuff has to be considered carefully. But we, you know, in this song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is so perfect and beautiful, and he shows what the possibility is, where the whole family is Krishna conscious, the mother, the father, the children, the household. And Mahaprabhu's devotees were like that. The family of Shivananda Sen. And, you know, even when Shivananda Sen couldn't get, you know, Nityananda's under a tree hungry, which is not a good situation. And he can't, and so he calls Shivananda, come here for a second. And he's kicking Shivananda Sen. Dissatisfied with the arrangement. And Shivananda Sen, his wife, is like, you were just kicked by Nityananda Prabhu. He said, I'm so fortunate. So, you know, so many happiness is there in the family affairs. But Prabhu, could you sing the Parama Karana? That's the famous song of Lochan Das Thakur. Na pahudi jana Lalita, let me have a Nitai Gora Chandra Avatar Sava. Let's tell everyone, it's first words Paramakarana. Let them give the books out because I think they will need it for this. You can start again in a second. And this one, it's on page 126. but in the Russian song, everyone have something now or close to it? Again. I know, I just want to say about this. As Prabhupada, he really, we know he's the ultimate devotee of Nitai Gaurachandra. And so there was a period where Gaur, Nitai, they're being installed all over ISKCON centers, like just one after another. And Prabhupada would visit these places and see Nitai Gaurachandra. He was in what he called Caracas, what do you call Caracas? You know, I was in Atlanta. So there were Nitai Gaurachandra in Caracas, Venezuela, and then Gurudev, the ones there now, he also, in deference to that, Nitai Gaurachandra. Then Prabhupada went to Miami, there was again Nitai Gauranga. Then he came to Atlanta, and again there were these beautiful Gauranitai deities, and so he said, I am coming from Caracas. And he's talking about Nitai Gaurachandra there, and he said, and then Miami, from Miami, Miami. And they are, and this is shows you how charming he could be, like Gurudev. And then he sees Nitai again here, and it's mind blowing. And we're talking about super opulent worship, beautiful, big, radiant deities. And Prabhupada looked at those deities and he said, and I can see that your temple is the best. And everyone went insane. And this song would be sung. Sometimes he's shedding tears. This song is really his and one of his favorite songs. It's favorite to all the devotees. And glorifying Nitai Gaurachandra, Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu.
Parama Karuna Pahu Dui Jana.
Parama Karuna Pahu Dui Jana.
Nitai Gaurachandra.
Nitai Gaurachandra.
Savayavatar Sarasira Mani.
Savayavatar Sarasira Mani. Kevala Ananda Kanda.
Bhaja Bhaja Bhai Chaitanya Nitai Sudridha Vishwasa Kori.
Bhaja Bhaja Bhai Chaitanya Nitai Sudridha Vishwasa Kori.
Vishaya Chariya Sero Se Majiya Mukhe Bolo Hari Hari.
Gopal Govinda Rama.
Jai Om Vishnu Pachala Bhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnu Pachala Bhakti Rakak Sridhar Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Bhagavan Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai. Jai Sipatikar Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Gandharva Govinda Sundar Ju Ki Jai. Sri Giriraj Govardhan Ki Jai. Sri Yupani Guru Varga Ki Jai. Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Sri Sri Brahmananda Ki Jai. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pramunikdananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Syamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavandam Ki Jai. Navadeeptam Ki Jai. Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mat Ki Jai. Sri Gupta Govardhan Ki Jai. Ganga Devi Jamuna Devi Bhakti Devi Tulsi Devi Ki Jai. Om Vishnupad Vishva Varenya Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Madhacharya Brinda Ki Jai. Jai Srila Bhakti Vimala Vidyut Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Srimad Sudarshan Prabhu Ki Jai. Bhakti Lalita Devi Dasi Ki Jai. Seva Brinda Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakti Brinda Ki Jai. Lochan Das Thakur Abhir Bab Mahamahotsava Ki 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 Dai Parma Karna Nitai Gora Chandra Ki Dai Nitai Go Primanandi